Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Well, welcome to the latest edition of the Royal Blue Podcast as we look forward to the return of Premier League action. But it's not been a quiet international break. There's been plenty going on off the field, and that's all culminated with the publication of Everton's account. I'm your host, Chris Beasley, joined today by the Echo's Conor O'Neill, our regular guest Gavin Buckland, and speaking of the Everton accounts that are hot on the off the press, as it were, I turn to you first, Connor. Everton have posted an operating loss of £44.7 million for the financial year. That's significantly less than the £121 million the previous year, but obviously highly COVID-affected figures. That particular year with no revenue in terms of the gate receipts. They're one of nine Premier League clubs to have reported losses so far, although six of them are heavier than the Blues. I mean, it's a bit of a financial minefield. Our heads are spinning with all these figures at the moment. What's your take of it all, Connor?
I think ultimately it answers the question what we all wanted to know, in the sense of how much the loss was. I think we all knew it was going to be a loss. You know, there was no one expecting any profit, any kind of, any kind of massive kind of profit, you know, injection of positivity. It was always going to be a loss. It was just how much that loss was. Yeah. You know, if it was down on what last year's accounts were and stuff like that. So we've got that answer. But I think, obviously, you know, we've only seen the kind of the brief summary so far of what's been put out. We haven't actually read the full account or the annual report as such as yet. So I think until we kind of read and get our teeth into them two, you know, items, we can't really, you know, say too much on how, you know, how this really looks for Everton, I think is me kind of, you know, opinion right now. Obviously, you know, the big question on everyone's lips is, you know, we now know what the loss is, but, you know, we don't know what it means, where it's come from, or where Everton go next, until we can properly kind of digest the read through the accounts, digest it, and come to some sort of, you know, collective, you know, summary. But yeah, I think, you know, the initial thing is, you know, they're out now. I think that was the big question, wasn't it? It was when were the accounts going to be released, which, you know, was the topic and a question that many supporters have been asking for a while. They're out now. You know, we know what the loss is. So, you know, the two big questions on fans' lips have been answered. I think, you know, the finer, you know, inner workings detail of these accounts will only become known once we get the chance to read them and properly digest them.
Yeah. And Gav, some interesting figures in there. There's further £70 million of financial support from the majority shareholder, Farhad Moshiri. And this is the first year we've really got stadium costs coming in a big way. £207 million on them compared to £20.3 million the previous year, with them, Everton moving onto the site at Bramley Moor. Docker, what are your initial takes on what you've seen so far?
Yeah, it's well worth that. Yeah, this is exciting, isn't it? can we talk about our centre-half issues or stuff like that? Or our midfield balance, perhaps. I think we need to remember that, you know, in the past, some of our figures have included the stadium costs. We've had to adjust them. This year, there'd be nothing to do with the stadium in our account, so that's good. It's a lot more cleaner. Also as well, we're not looking at the actual accounts. We're not seeing the actual accounts themselves yet. We're just operating off to general numbers. And my impressions is that, well, presentationally, it looks better. 44 million loss compared to 119 loss for last year. Presentationally, that's better, isn't it? Because it's just a smaller number. And I think the point I think it's been made is a lot of clubs, I think, in the post-COVID world are reporting big losses, aren't they?
Yeah, one of at least nine, yeah.
Yeah, we're not the only club. Our problem is some of our problems, we don't want to get into the players we bought and not be and high wages, happened during the COVID period. We're actually coming out of that now a little bit. So that's worth mentioning. For me, I think compared to last year, I think we're showing, you know, obviously, and this is what we've needed to do, we've got more player sales this year. We obviously sold Richarlison for 50 million, not all of that would be profit. We sold Luca Dean for a profit. And we've also, James Rodriguez, I think, was 6 or 7 million quid, wasn't he? So our profits from player sales, which you do need to do to have a, you know, to survive, is going to be significantly greater than last year. And our wages have come down by, I think, 20 million, which is good, which we're going in the right direction. And also expect for this year to go down again because we got rid of some big earners last summer. So that's heading in the right direction. But in terms of, for me, in terms of where we are at business, we're still overheating a lot in terms of wages and the cost of the playing squad. But that takes time. I mean, I think what people don't realise in football is that your costs, you don't go from 100 million loss to a profit in 12 months unless you sell 100 million pounds worth of players. You've got players on contracts, and if they don't move, you've still got to pay them. So although we're still making a loss, we are making active efforts to reduce that loss considerably, and we've done that over the last 12 months, the 12 months concerned in 21-22, hence why we didn't buy anybody in the summer of 21. And, you know, any activity we had in the January transfer window was basically out of the Luca Dean money, wasn't it, really? So, you know, last year, it was part of the cleansing process for me, but we're still nowhere near where we need to be in terms of running the business on an even keel. And that will take time. And I've said all along, this is all financial, you know, sorts of losses, you know, setting aside all the COVID stuff and all that. It's all down to our overspending between 2016-17 and 2020. We're still paying a price for that. And I said along, that's going to take another couple of years, you know, 18 months or so to come out of the wash. And I think in this period, I think this current year where we are now, you know, we may sold Anthony Gordon for 40 million quid. I think, you know, I would hope us to be, you know, closer to break even for the year, which would be something to start working with. So this is part of this set of accounts is getting back to normal, as far as, you know, trying to get back to normal. And that will, you know, something that will take another 18 months perhaps to go through. Once we get all those people who were bought between 2016-17 and 2019 off the books.
Yeah.
I mean, who they are, Gabamon, Gomez, you know, what we do with the core, I don't know. So, you know, those type of players who come off the books. So, and we've got a few saleable assets, perhaps. So it's part of the cleansing process, this, but we're still not in a great position.
Yeah.
And it would just be interesting to see what happens going forward. But this just shows you why the club has been has not spent a lot in January. Because as fans, we can't have it both ways, can we?
Yeah.
You can't say, oh, we're making losses and, you know, this is terrible, which, yeah, I agree with that. But the same time, say, we've not bought anybody. Why haven't we bought anybody? Well, because we've got to try and get back on an even keel. So it's you know, it just shows you something that the problems that we've got are still there, albeit we are sort of gradually, you know, reducing them. And I'm talking there about the pay bill. I think bringing it down by 20 million is good. It's going to come down again, you know, over the next, you know, from that as well. So hopefully with the Gordon money, get the Moyes Keane money this year as well, don't we? Hopefully we'll be, you know, more on an even keel, maybe even break even for this year. And that's, as I say, it's all part of the cleansing process. but there's still a lot of work to be done within the club. I mean, the other one, which, you know, forget about that, is the 200 million for Bramley Moore, isn't it? That's being spent. That just shows you how much work has been on Bramley Moore. And that'll be... So that just shows you the amount of construction work and stuff that's gone on in 21-22. And that will that will obviously continue into 22-23. So, in summary, it's what we expected. It's welcome that we are reducing costs in some areas, but we've still got a long way to go for us to get back onto what you would call an even keel, to be honest with you. And that's, as I say, that's going to take time and may involve the sale of third players.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, and then Connor, in terms of the commercial revenue, that was slightly up, 50.4 million on 47 million the previous year. And we've got to remember also, it's a changing world out there. The end of the commercial sponsorship agreements with the Russian companies, USM, Megafon, and Yota. But on the other side of the coin, there was a reduction in the broadcast revenues with the team dropping from the 10th to 16th. And I suppose that'll be something again this year. I mean, who's to say at this point what Everton's final league position will be this season? But again, that could be on the lower side.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of position now, it could be anything from 12th to 20th, couldn't it? You know, realistically speaking. But yeah, I think, you know, going back to what Gav said there, I think, you know, it looks better, but there's still a lot of work to be done, clearly, isn't it? There's still a long way to go, I think, in terms before you know, things even themselves out. But in terms, you know, commercial revenue, the growth, you know, that's impressive because obviously that's one area of the business that people have been highly critical of, isn't there? You know, that commercially they're not running, they're not as good as other clubs in the Premier League, and that, you know, they're way behind where they need to be and where they should be. But I think, like I said earlier, I think that, you know, the thing with the situation as things stand is, you know, obviously we're working, you know, kind of the rough figures essentially, you know, until we kind of get the chance to read the accounts properly and digest, you know, the full information is when you can kind of make proper, you know, concise judgments, because, you know, I think for now it's, you know, it's only sections and highlights of what we're seeing. But, you know, obviously the I suppose in a small sense, you know, the promising thing is the loss is down, but, you know, it's still a loss. And like Gav said, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done behind the scenes of the football club to make things better.
Yeah. And Gav, we mentioned that £70 million financial support from the majority shareholder. I mean, it shows on one side at least a continued financial commitment from Farhad Moshiri, but then to a certain extent, he's having to prop the club up in certain respects as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing about if he, you know, the place he wants for the club, that'd be, you know, if he wants to sell the club, you know, you're not buying a club, you're buying, like, for the couple of years, you're going to have to fund some of the losses, aren't you, as well? So, there's, you know, it just shows... It's great that he shows his commitment and, like, the 200 million for Bramley Moore, but it just shows you how off-kilter we are in terms of what we've been spending over the last few years compared to what we've been getting in. And that, I mean, you welcome that as an Everton fan, but just that rather than sort of something that we should be thankful for, it's actually you shouldn't have to do anyway because we should be on an even keel. And you know, that won't, you know, that's quite a lot of money in 12 months. It's interesting, the commercial side, because I think the USM numbers are still in here, aren't they? Because I think the contract is still going. We'd lose that this year, but the counter to that is we get more money from the overseas TV rights this year, I think. And I think those two things should balance each other out over the calendar year. And just picking up on what Connor said, you are right in that our commercial deals. I'm not defending the club here, but I hear stuff I say about our commercial deals are not great. Well, they are on par with the club of our standing. We're not going to get 200, 300 million pound a year commercial income like the big six do, whatever, because we're not in the top six. We've not got, you know, worldwide fan bases. If you have a look at our commercial deals, say for like shirts, you know, shared sponsorship kit deals, they are what you would expect a mid-table Premier League club. Actually, probably a little bit ahead of that, to be honest with you. Yeah. So, commercially, our deals we get are about what you would expect. I would never say they were undercut on those deals. Yeah. But we shouldn't really, you know, we have people comparing us to, I don't know, Liverpool or Man United or Arsenal. We can't do that. It's you know, chalk and cheese. The market dictates how much people pay us for shared sponsorship and kit deals. And so we always need to remember that in terms of our sponsorship. And what we get is about market rates, probably a little bit high in some cases. So there's only a limited amount of money we can get commercially, and that's dictated by our performance, isn't it, really? So the message from this, isn't it? If you do better off the pitch, on the pitch, you'd hopefully get a bit more money in, both in league position and commercially, but it's not happening at the moment. And, you know, and I think this pain will be with us for another, as I say, year, 18 months, probably, maybe even a little bit longer.
I know, just to add on, when you talk about commercially and stuff, I know another club once in the Premier League, we were fighting relegation. You know, they had actually two sponsors lined up for the following season. They had one who was sponsored with doing the Premier League and a company who was sponsored with doing the Championship, because it's so precious. What you're saying there about performance-related,
yeah,
you know, costs. They essentially had two businesses, one of which would be the main sponsor doing the Premier League and one which would be in the Championship, because it's almost like, with your Premier League club, you're a Premier League club. If you're a Championship club, you're a Championship club. It's the difference is huge, isn't it? You know, you think of, you know, worldwide television and what, you know, everything else, you know, the Premier League attracts compared to the Championship. It's off the scale, isn't it? So even in that sense, you know, it's a very precious, fine margins, performance-driven industry, isn't it, essentially?
Well, that is the elephant in the room when you see these numbers, isn't it? You know, this is not a club that can afford to be relegated.
Yeah.
And this is just reinforced here, both in terms of, you mentioned the shareholder support and the money that's being pumped into Bramley Moor. A lot, you know, and I know we've not spoken about the Premier League referral and stuff yet. You know, as the world and its wife knows, the Championship financial regulations are far more ruthless than what the Premier Leagues are. So, you know, this is just a reminder in the clearest way of the need to remain in the Premier League, not just next season, just, you know, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Well, let's just move on to that before we go on to what is firmer ground for Connor and myself, at least in terms of the football side of things. But if we just get that one out of the way, because this is the first time we've done a podcast since then, Connor. It was about this time, wasn't it? Friday late in the afternoon. Everyone's thinking, you know, it's going to be a quiet weekend in the middle of the international break, and then were hit by this charge from the Premier League. I mean, whatever the final outcome is, I mean, it's not a great look when you get that on the back of what has been like the joint worst season points-wise in the club history.
No, I mean, it felt like another, just when you thought, you know, things were settling down a little bit in terms of Sean Dyche, you know, coming in, getting the team back on track, you know, the club being up the relegation zone, you know, heading in, you know, sitting in that international break in 15th, when you think of, you know, when Sean Dyche came in, everyone was second bottom and everyone was fearing the worst. You know, along comes another kind of, you know, another, you know, blow from nowhere, basically. And I think it was a blow from nowhere. I think nobody, you know, seen this coming. You know, ourselves at the Echo, people that, you know, we work at, you know, at Everton Football Club, you know, we're taken aback by this from the Premier League. They weren't expecting it. You know, the position of the club for a long time, albeit that they've been working with the Premier League to make sure everything was, you know, above board and smoothly. And, you know, they were, I think, as shocked as anyone at this news. And, you know, ultimately, we don't know why they've been referred to, you know, they have been referred. We don't know why they've been referred to the Premier League, obviously. I get to confirm that, you know, we don't know an awful lot, do we, if we're being brutally honest about what the whole situation surrounds. When you think of, for instance, you know, around the kind of the bigger picture in terms of, you know, when will the hearing possibly take place and stuff like that, you know, what punishment could Everton receive? You know, we don't know anything, you know, about at the minute. So yeah, it come from nowhere. It's far from ideal. It's the last thing you kind of need. It's the last thing the club want hanging over them as they head into, you know, a couple of huge important months in the season. You know, Gav spoke about it there in terms of, you know, if Everton ever needed any reason to keep preserve their Premier League status, you know, these accounts are it. And obviously, you know, this is the last thing that they needed in that battle against relegation. So yeah, it was a shock. I must admit myself, I clocked off for the day, and then I'd seen it bleep up on my phone and thought, oh wow, you know, this is huge. Yeah. Like I say, we don't know the full ins and outs just yet, but you know, it's a prospect and it's a referral that Everton didn't need. They obviously don't want. And it's probably the last thing that anyone at the collected the football club imagined was coming their way, you know, Friday lunchtime last week.
Yeah. Gav, just been saying to Connor about that Premier League charge. Details are scarce at the moment. It remains that way. The Premier League have had their say. Everton have made their statement and said they wouldn't be saying any more at this point. But as I said to Connor, it's regardless of whatever, what ultimately ends up happening, and it's not a great look when you just had the joint worst season in the club's history from an equivalent points point of view.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah. So you're suffering both sides, really, aren't you? You know, you've escaped by the skin of your teeth on the pitch, and off the pitch, you've certainly last year. You know, when the Premier League discussed our case, we escaped by the skin of our teeth, by the looks of it. And I think the one thing it's worth pointing out within all of this and the way the Premier League assess people, it's obviously done on a rolling 3-year period or 4-year period, if you include the COVID years. And so last year, you won't believe this, when we got assessed last year, we had 17-18 as part of the assessment period, which is quite a good year, which you probably just about broke even. So we're being referred because one of the reasons is this year we've obviously made a loss of 30 odd million. I know there's some money that come off there. So we've in the rolling period, we've lost the good year and gained the bad year. So overall we're worse off. And so we're looking at a completely different scenario to last year. And my guess that's one of the reasons why we've got to go in front of the beak this year and not last year, because our position has worsened. And we've gone from, we've lost a year that, you know, there would have been no losses to a year where we've made 30-odd million losses. And so that's the reason why I think, one of the reasons why it's being triggered. But at the same time, and this will all come out in the hearing, of course, it's a bit strange, isn't it, that, And I know the club has pointed this out, I think, either indirectly or directly, is, you know, when you have a look at the rule book, you know, it says the club should work with the Premier League over your financial issues and be guided by them, what you can and can't do. And if we've been doing that, then you would expect there to be no referral, wouldn't you? Future referral, because we're doing what the Premier League says. But we're now getting referred, so either we've done something we shouldn't have done, or the Premier League have not done what they were supposed to have done properly.
Yeah.
And I suspect, for me, that's the two sides of the argument, isn't it, here? You know, as well as the fact that our financial position has got worse for reasons just explained. And it'll just be interesting to see what will come out in all of this. And as lots of other people have said, is time and is Everton that, you know, when they're talking about an independent regulator, you know, I think this Manchester City case that's been going on for years has come into it, because obviously they've charged, you know, well, the points of the City's irregularities or alleged irregularities out.
Yeah.
And so for that case to City, with City to stand up, they've got to be doing everything everything right and by the book with other clubs, haven't they, in the Premier League? Because it undermines the argument, Man City. And so that's left us in a vulnerable position, and may lead other clubs in vulnerable positions as well. So there's lots of movable parts there, but I'm still a little bit baffled about, if we've been working with the Premier League, as has been well known, for 18 months now, why has what changed significantly? You know, in that time, apart from we have made more losses, but actually, you actually overseen them losses because we've been working with you. So yeah. it's just going to be an interesting case, and it's just going to be I would imagine Everton stance will be this is our case, and we'll have a load of COVID costs that actually we want to offset against our losses, and you prove that that's not right because they accepted it last year. You know, it's going to be a very, very interesting case, this.
Yeah. Well, my head's in a spin. I hope our listeners are okay. Connor, I'm going to talk football with you now. You were at Finch Farm yesterday.
That's a welcome relief for you. That's a welcome relief.
Mr. Deitch, how was he? What were his thoughts like ahead of the return to action?
Yeah, he was in a fine mood. He was, you know, not in any way taken back by the Premier League referral. He was, you know, battered that question away straight away to start the press conference. In terms of, you know, basically standing by, you know, we spoke to the club and the club told him he'd done nothing wrong and that's good enough for him.
Yeah.
His most telling line for me was, you know, in the embargo section with us journalists, was able to print journalists, including ourselves. We, you know, he was asked, you know, did conversations take place before he got the job in January about Everton's financial concerns? And if he'd have known that this was, you know, potentially going to come, would that have prevented him from taking the job? And, you know, he knocked that back, you know, forthright in the sense of, you know, they said, no, this is Everton Football Club, and Everton Football Club, you know, kind of come knocking, you know, you don't say no type thing, which is, you know, very refreshing to hear from a supporter perspective in that, you know, they've got someone in charge who knows just how big a football club Everton is, and how, you know, privileged Sean Dyche is to be in charge of this football club. So, yeah, he was in a fine mood. I think he's looking forward to getting back, you know. In true Sean Dyche fashion, he, you know, didn't get carried away, you know. He was asked a few questions about Ellis Sims and his developments and stuff, and, you know, he was very much kind of keen to keep the, you know, the young lad's feet on the ground, I think, and, you know, retain getting too excited. But, yeah, I think he was, you know, like all of us, he's looking forward. He's excited to get back to, you know, action, you know, bread and butter on Monday night. Obviously, you know, Goodison under lights. There's not many games. I know we always say this every time there's a midweek game at Goodison, but there really isn't that many midweek games left, is there, at Goodison Park under the lights. And, you know, certainly Monday night football, it should be a special occasion.
Yeah. Shame our listeners aren't getting the visual on this. It's actually Connor under the lights at the moment. He's got that big light shining down on him from heaven. Gav, another development we've had to this game is that there'll be no Antonio Conte at Goodison Park. How much of a factor do you think that's going to be?
Yeah, can I just say Connor looks far more attractive under lights than Goodison, by the way, at this point. Got to keep in your good book. Yeah, I think we said last week, didn't we, that would have been better playing this fixture last Saturday, last weekend, because they've had another week to sort it out, and they've appointed, you know, the manager to the end of the season. You don't know. It could work both ways, couldn't it, really? I mean, we're in a... It sounds like we're in a massive state of flux under Conte off the pitch. And I think, you know, that they've got the week to sort of address that. But there still appears to be a massive state of flux anyway with Spurs off the pitch anyway, because you've obviously had the problems with the director of football and, you know, stories of player revolts and what the player's mindset is going into this game on Monday is, you know, you don't know, do you? It could go either way. I know he did reasonably well, didn't he, when Conte was ill. But you just don't know how it's going to pan out. And you'd hope that they would still be suffering a little bit, and still a little bit of a rabble, to be honest with you, Tottenham, and hopefully we can take advantage of that.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Connor, do you think it's a good time to play Tottenham? I mean, it's not been a great recent record against them.
Well, it's one of them, isn't it? I think it's a tough one, this, because normally, you know, you would suggest the manager leaving and the fallout and stuff, but, you know, this is still a very, very good Spurs side with some very, very good players, you know, Harry Kane, Son, you know, for Charleston's fit to play, we all know how good he is, you know, still a very good, strong Spurs side, and it could be a Spurs side that is actually, you know, benefited by Antonio Conte leaving, in the sense of, you know, the shackles could be off and they could be, you know, free to do what what they wanted to do and play with a little bit more freedom, a little bit more expression. You would like to hope, I think you'd like to hope that from an Everton perspective, Everton will look to get, you know, start the front foot and get on Tottenham early and make their Tottenham a little bit edgy and a little bit nervy and don't allow them to settle and maybe try and get, you know, a bit of frustration and a little bit of kind of, you know, not needle as such, but, you know, try and be a bit more aggressive and put Tottenham under the cosh a little bit and, you know, get the crowd up and hope that Tottenham maybe have a bit of a wobble because, you know, we saw against Southampton before the international break, you know, Tottenham were 3-1 up and cruising and the next thing, you know, Southampton got one back and, you know, Conte's side effectively fell to pieces and ended up drawing the game. So you'd like to hope that Everton, you know, kind of start aggressive, get on the front foot and put themselves in a position in which they, you know, are strong and look to dominate. But I don't think you can say, you know, is this a good time to play Tottenham? I don't think you can sit here and say, yes, it is, because, you know, you can't lose sight of the fact they've got so many good players, so many players in, you know, areas where they can hit. You know, Harry Kane is, you know, an exceptional finisher. Son's a great forward. You know, Richarlison is, you know, is dangerous on his day. So, yeah, I think it's a little bit early to say, or a little bit naive to say, you know, this is a good time to play Tottenham. But I certainly think Everton can put Tottenham under pressure if they start well and hopefully maybe get them in a position where they wobble and crumble a little bit.
Yeah. Gav, I know you like to cast a tactical eye on these things. After Ellis Sims came on and scored his first goal last time out, I mean, how close is he to pushing for a start for this one, do you think? I mean, would you go with him or would you keep it with Demarai Gray?
I keep with Demarai Gray, really, to be honest with you. I think by accident we sort of probably found the position where Demarai Gray sort of contributes the most to the team, in that he doesn't have to sack back, and I think he's done a lot of thankless work well, to be fair. And I think Sims's role is what it was at Chelsea, but has been a couple of games this season, it is coming on, and you know, if we need to protect the lead or stay in the game, is just to put himself about a bit, hold the ball up, and he's shown he can be a little bit of a goal threat. But I keep Gray. I think for the way we're playing at the moment, I think we need his pace up front a little bit, and I keep Gray. But I think Sims, hopefully, will be imbued by confidence after his goal against Chelsea, and, you know, I think he'll have something to contribute between now and the end of the season.
Right, it's predictions time then. Monday night, I said, under the lights. Connor, what are you going for?
I'm going to go for Everton to win 2-1.
Oh, like the last time they beat Tottenham in front of fans over a decade ago, 1-0 down in the 90th minute, came back 2-1. What about you, Gav?
Yeah, I think it's not our last Premier League win against Tottenham, it is, isn't it, I think?
No, they won on this day in 2021.
In front of a crowd and the Goodison anyway. So I think I'm just going to go with 1-11. The one thing I would say is, regardless of where Spurs are at the moment, you know, when we were all in the office the other week and we were talking about these three games, looked a really bad set of games.
Yeah.
Whatever we think now, this Spurs game, because of what's happened to Spurs and because of what's happened to us in terms of our form, this looks far more like a game where we can get points from than what it did 3 weeks ago, doesn't it?
Hopefully, yeah. And it might need to be given that all the games that are going on Saturday beforehand. But
Everton, I think I saw, could they go as high as 12th if results go the way and they'd be Tottenham on Monday? But then they could kick off Monday night in the bottom three if results go against them.
When you've got 3 points between eight teams or whatever it is. Yeah.
Please, what are you going for yourself?
Yeah, I'll also go. For 1-0, seems to be the go-to scoreline at the moment. Let's hope so. On that positive note, after all our deliberations, we'll be back with you next week to reflect on whatever happens on Monday night. And I've been your host, Chris Beasley. I've been joined by Conor O'Neill, Gavin Buckland. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.